Thank you for joining us wherever you are. This podcast episode is brought to you by the Old Ways Actual Play Team. This actual play uses the 7th edition Call of Cthulhu tabletop role-playing game rules by Chaosium. This actual play is performed by adults and in an adult setting. While we try very hard to stick to language for all ages, listeners should know that this podcast may include mature themes. All content, including names, places, events, companies, and etc., that may bear resemblance to entities living or dead, is strictly coincidental. My name is Michael Diamond, and for tonight's game, I will be your keeper. Thank you for joining us again on another episode of the Old Ways Podcast. I'm your keeper, Keeper Michael, and we return to Horror on the Orient Express, where we are hoping tonight to leave Venice, should tea time allow. And so, we'll get started shortly, but first, I would like to thank all of the cast for their participation and their pure joy and energy that they bring to the show for all of you. I know that many of you listeners enjoy the way their characters have developed, and I have no doubt that they will continue to develop future for us. And so, without further ado, introductions begin to my right.
Hello, this is Mike. I play James Robert Fraser, who is very glad to be finally given the chance to sit down and enjoy a nice cup of tea.
Yes. And to your right.
Hi, this is Rena. I play Lady Elizabeth Fitzroy, and I've got some magic to learn.
Oh, yes. Yes, no, it comes for us all at some point, doesn't it? We continue in the missing Mr. Griffith formation. But yet we would turn to who would be on his right next, and that is...
Hi, I'm Miranda, and I play Maggie Bellinger, and I'm hopeful I maybe have found a new friend in Paul. I mean, he was my friend before, but just in a new way.
Hmm. Yes, it does seem that Paul seems to have perhaps encouraged your organization of thought under the divinity of Maggie, and then perhaps he's seeking to help you become the butterfly we all know that you are. Last but most certainly not least.
I'm Martin, and I'm playing Richard Courtney. And there's still an outstanding item that we didn't really cover last session. And we know that Richard's kind of on the mend. That's good. He's not dead. And for a moment there, we weren't sure. But did his trousers survive?
I don't think there's any chance. But we can certainly cover that in the opening scene, if you'd like, your trousers. We'll raise the curtain tonight in the room of Richard Courtney, who is perhaps looking forward to finding some sort of a wheeled sitting settee, or perhaps wheeled chair, a bath chair, I believe they referred to last session, if I'm not mistaken, in hopes to wheel him around the city. Yes?
Yes, I think Mr. Fraser will go and inquire with the staff if such an item is to be had.
Wow. And with quick report, it is to be had. The staff is happy to supply you with the chair. They said that if any guest of the hotel who might need such a chair, they'd be happy to provide one. And so they will send one up right away.
Splendid, splendid stuff. In the hopes that Paul has given Richard the all clear to travel today, Fraser will bring the chair up, or wait for the chair to be brought up, whichever is the most practical option, and knock on the professor's door and provide said wheeled movement device.
You provide it, Professor. You provide it to the professor, and you are able to, if you'd like to, Richard, to find yourself up enough to sit in it.
That's good. So Richard will eye this thing up. And, just sort of very slowly get out of bed, you know, twist his legs around. There's a bit of muscle movement needed to sort of pull himself upright on his bed. So he's probably going to do that kind of thing where he's half sideways. He's going to dangle his legs out just to make the thing a little bit more easier on the old torso. And, he's going to try and walk over to his wheeled chair.
It's not the most comfortable seat in the house, certainly, but it does take an awful lot of pressure off the stomach and kind of lower form there where you'd had some recent injuries. And sleep has done you well, as has the work of Paul. who pops in just for a moment and to double check a few fittings there on the chair to make sure they'll wheel well. He'll pass a glance up at Mr. Fraser and say, we do need to have a moment, if you don't mind, sir.
Yes, of course.
He steps a little bit away from you, Richard, but not terribly so much that you can't hear what he's going to say. I'm a little concerned about Miss Bellinger and some things that she said to me.
Indeed.
I don't believe we have time to cover them here, but if we might, for expediency's sake alone, we need to find ourselves out of the city as soon as possible.
This is very much what we have in mind, yes. I was rather hoping that you would be able to give the professor the all clears, as it were, to travel today, if at all possible.
Happily so. I know this might be a little, he kind of swallows, this might be a little forward of me and someone of my position amongst your, amongst the group here, but I need to be able to speak with Bellinger at length alone when we get on the train. And I mean no impropriety by it, but I need peace and quiet, sir.
No. I quite understand. I am very well aware, and here Fraser is really trying to pick his words very carefully, that Miss Bellinger has been under considerable stress and strain. And this, quite understandably, has provoked something of an extreme reaction, shall we say, in her.
Yes. The reason I mention it, sir, is that cases like hers are very rare in society. And I did work with situations like this at Charrington. And
you
I believe,
did?
Yes, of course. It was not just the maladies of the body, of course, but Charrington's focus is on the mind.
Well, I'm very, very glad to hear you say that, Paul. I do know that her ladyship had expressed some concern about Miss Bellinger's well-being, and I believe she was going to speak to you on the matter as one woman speaking on another woman's behalf, if you catch my meaning.
I would just say that, in all fairness and truth, genders have nothing to do with it. It is a malady of one person to another, and that is what must be found at the root cause and must be worked with.
Well, as ever, Paul, we rely on your professionalism and your discretion in this matter.
Of course. I would just say, in this sort of service to her, there will be things you may hear or overhear. And I would just say that when someone is in this state, you must understand that they will continue to say things they may not mean.
Yes, I am. I'm well used to people saying things they do not mean, Paul.
Of course.
And Fraser kind of just looks him straight in the eye. Not like he's intimating anything about him, but there's clearly he's speaking from experience.
I won't keep you any further. I'm going to go and assist Mr. Griffith with packing. Well, what he needs. He's taken quite a bit of. He's had a rough night, it seems.
Yes, indeed. Thank you. Thank you, Paul. I'm very much appreciate you coming to me with this, and I am sure that with your ministrations, and Miss Bellinger will effect a swift and speedy recovery.
Oh, I have no doubt. We must have time together to find the source of whatever caused this, and I will need to take copious notes of her experiences.
Of course. Could I possibly make a psychology roll?
Absolutely. What are you attempting to discern?
What I'm attempting to discern is Paul is clearly speaking quite candidly, and he's expressing the fact that he's got some experience in these sort of matters. Fraser's kind of interested to try and work out what his motives are, whether he has Miss Bellinger's best intentions at heart, or whether perhaps, as he said, this is quite unusual. This is something that he sees as some sort of a career escalation for himself, or something along those lines.
Certainly, that's fine. Paul will contest you with persuade with the hand of fate.
All righty then. Let me see. Where's my psychology? There it is. Well, I got a 09 under 49.
Okay, so that's...
That is extreme success.
Okay.
Just.
So you're not certain Paul's motives are entirely pure.
All right.
Some of his motives may lie in the scientific. Maybe perhaps he's looking at Maggie more as a test subject.
Uh-huh, yeah, guinea pig kind of thing.
Yes. And it could be for various reasons that you get that feeling. Paul's intentions have generally been fairly well. He's been very helpful. Mm-hmm. But perhaps that has been to make sure that he is well respected and well thought of.
Well, yes. It's entirely possible he's an ambitious man.
It's entirely possible.
There's all sorts of things going on here that he could write some very interesting papers on in the future. But I'll leave him with that, and I'll just thank him for his help. And if he's leaving to go and see to Simon, I'll stay with Richard. Otherwise, I'll go back to my room.
He takes his leave of the both of you and gives his essential sign-off on traveling for the professor, provided that the group makes a clear decision about its purpose leaving. He doesn't want the professor jostled around or moved a bunch if the group doesn't have a concrete plan of where it is going and when.
Yep, that is next on the agenda, I think. So at the next feasible opportunity, I think Mr. Fraser will pop down and see if there's any word on these ferries or sailings.
Certainly.
Where they're going to and whether they're anything that might actually be of any use or not.
Certainly. The word you get back from the gentleman at the staff bar, Giorgiano, you can call him George, it's fine. George tells you that boat traffic in general in the harbor area is now, as of this morning, is down to a whisper. And he believes from some of the information he's received from people who live a little north of the city center is that the only train that is going in and out today may be the Orient Express. And the other trains have been turned away and have been basically put off or moved back by military forces from Padua or Verona. So far more western than you need to be. And so even if you were going to try to get a train to go around Venice, you'd have to find some sort of method to get back west to continue going east. And you're talking about an enormous headache.
The most practical and feasible option really is the Orient Express then for us.
Especially because you already have tickets.
Yeah.
And so you're not fighting someone else to get a seat. So you would know that what you need to do is call the office at the train station and advise the Venice service line that you're going to be boarding again.
Yep. Well, in that case, that's what I'll do. And I'll meet up with the others later.
Okay. It's a simple phone call that you make, and they mark you down, having already taken you into the register previously.
That way, if we do change our minds and decide to go another way, there's a little bit of smoke and mirrors going on for anybody who might be looking for us.
Very true. Miss Bellinger, how are you spending your morning then?
Oh, I'd probably get a bite to eat, and then what's it like outside?
It's overcast. And it's a little cooler than normal.
Mm-hmm.
Are you just opening the window and taking a glance?
No, I kind of want to go outside and like gaze into the water.
Sure.
Run my hand through the water.
So stepping outside, your left leg is a little tricky this morning, but you just figure that it's just another pain point for you to work through.
Eat up the pain now.
You're able to get close enough to the water through some of the steps and lap a bit at the water with your fingers. And you can see that there's still some leftover residue from whatever happened yesterday. The shoreline and the sea itself is rather calm as far as boats go. It's an overcast day and a little cooler than you had experienced in some of your previous days here in Venice. There aren't an awful lot of people out at this point. This is a main tourist hub and things are seemingly pretty quiet. There's a couple of men, these same black shirts that you'd encountered on the Rialto Bridge late last night, are stationed nearby. Some of them are walking around. And it seems, anyway, that they aren't poking or prodding anybody yet. That's about what you intake.
I have no concern for them.
No, why would you? They don't factor in. Why don't you give me a spot hidden roll while you're standing outside, though?
Okay. I'm fairly good at those. Reasonably. That's a hard success. 16 under 41.
Okay. So while you're standing outside, a couple of things that you notice are the people who are outside are wearing overly outlandish religious garb.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of people wearing a simple crucifix, you can tell that people have adorned themselves with a lot more crosses,
mm-hmm.
whether it be clothing or whether it be jewelry or hats. There seems to be a serious religious fervor that's taking over the town.
Mm-hmm.
You can hear that people seem to be massing for midday. There's a plan to have some sort of mass in San Marcos Square. But one of the things that you notice too with the other half of this environmental spot hidden you notice is that the water has come up an awful lot.
Oh.
Water level has come up significantly. And it's now come over the banks of one of these rios. And it isn't far from the hotel at all to get your look around. But the San Marcos Square is flooded.
Oh.
I mean, it's got to be knee deep.
I think Maggie would relish in this idea, knowing that her children are of the water. She, in some sense, might even come from water. So she might even go as far as to make a point to walk through the water, enjoy it, run her hand through the water of the canal and everything.
Okay. Yeah, you wander for a bit and try to enjoy some of the new environs of Venice. And you find yourself walking down that long, wide pathway that is normally to the main part of the square. You can't help but notice that there's so many more people now in the water. I mean, there's tons of them. And a lot of these people are wearing the same sort of religious garb. And you get to the square itself. Obviously, the basilica is there. And the water now goes right up to the basilica. And that's really when you catch the first sound, just at the edge of your hearing, of the crack of leather. And there in the square, several parishioners have taken to whipping themselves in some sort of strange religious chastisement. And they seem to be speaking to the air in sort of this reverence and prayer. And then after a little while, they use these long, like, leather lashes to beat their backs and their legs.
Can I get close enough to hear what they're saying?
Well, certainly. Do you speak Italian?
Oh, poop. No, I don't.
You can definitely get close enough to hear what they're saying. Make it out as a different story.
Yeah.
But you, some of the words are barely interchangeable with some of the other words you hear.
Mm-hmm.
You hear a lot of pleading. You don't hear any mention of Christ. And that's probably the most interesting part. So whomever these men and women are praying to, they're not referencing Christ at all.
Part of Maggie assumes it's because they know she's here. Even if they aren't directly worshiping or praying to her, it's merely because of her presence that this is happening. Like, they are having the same revelation that she has had. And so she would probably be, like, smiling, taking this all in, watching, moving throughout the crowd as she is, assuming she is the one being worshipped.
Why don't you give me a power roll?
Okay. That is a hard success. 35 under 75.
You begin to feel something from these people. There is a group of three of them, especially, who are very fervent in what they're doing. There's a man, and it looks like two women, perhaps his wife and maybe a daughter. She can't be more than 15 or 16. And they're reveling in this prayer practice, this series of whippings and beatings. And you see that they're now on their knees, occasionally half in the water, half out of it. The water is, of course, a little muddy. It's now mixing with blood from their bodies that is beginning to seep out of these very tiny cracks that the leather is making. You sort of stand close enough to them to see what's going on, and you feel compelled to stand in front of them, to take that position of power, to be the person that they're sending all that energy to. And it really begins to feel your form with warmth. Even if they don't know they're praying to you, you feel that they are.
Maggie kind of wants to address them. They're like kneeled down, correct?
Yeah. The father of this three-person family is kneeling. The wife is by his side, continuing to comfort is a strong term. She's helping him lash himself.
Mm-hmm.
He seems to be begging her to do it more, and not in a strange entertainment sort of way. This is fervent need to be beaten with this leather. And she's helping him not in hopes of doing anything other than appeasing whatever thing he's praying to.
Yeah, I think what Maggie wants to do is put her hands out and get close to them in a way to get their attention. Yes, we must go deeper. Come with me out into the water.
Okay, I'd like you to make a persuade roll.
Okay.
And to do so, the Hand of Fate is going to assist you.
Oh, good.
It's going to give you advantage on this roll, Miss Bellinger.
Oh, well, I got a 16 under 20 for the first one.
Mm-hmm.
And let me roll my second D10. Was a 5, so just 16 under 20.
Okay.
Gods really need to be more persuasive, Miss Bellinger.
I'm working on it. I get to tick the box, so next time around I get to improve my persuasion.
He stands back up just slightly and seems to truly for the first time catch notice of you. He has this revelation you see across his face, and he begins to nod and sort of move towards you. You see others nearby start to do the same. He cries out in Italian, words you don't understand, but certainly do not need to. There's now 5 or 10 Venetians that are around you, some of them now kneeling, others continuing to flog themselves, the young, the old, even some infirm likely who have crawled their way into the square. And they fan out in a semicircle around you. They offer you the strangest sort, but yet the most reaffirming sort of praise. And I will leave you there for just a moment. So, Lady Elizabeth, the morning tea was wonderful. The book reading was informative. And although you're not certain yet how to completely continue your use of such a power, you do know that you'll have to get a book on German relatively soon.
As quickly as possible, in fact, once we get out of town.
Your morning plans, what do they involve?
Well, packing. Also reviewing my notes from my reading just to refresh my memory. And then going out to find Mr. Fraser, see what the travel arrangements are.
Okay. Yeah, finding Mr. Fraser isn't terribly difficult. You do so likely as they're sort of test driving this bath chair for the professor, which actually looks kind of comfortable.
Mr. Fraser?
Your ladyship, yes. Yes, we've been trying to get the professor as mobile as possible so that we can effect our exit from Venice today. If God is willing.
Ah, excellent. Mr. Fraser, I would advise that we don't go out and about if we can avoid it. I had a rather interesting run-in with Alexander last night, and he's still in town, as far as I'm aware, and I would prefer not to run into him yet again.
Last night? When we were at the clock tower?
Yes, when you were upstairs before I arrived.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
It's quite all right. I handled myself quite well, thank you. But an interesting fellow.
What did he have to say for himself? I take it he did not attempt to harm you.
No, he attempted a battle of wits, and I'm rather certain he came off the loser. So...
Well, he was fighting a losing battle there, huh?
Quite. But he wishes, apparently, to work together on opening my book. Or rather, father's book.
Oh.
I don't think, at the moment, he intends anything intentionally nefarious. He did mention that opening it will require both of us. Meaning... I doubt he'll harm myself, seeing as he needs me, but I'd rather not encounter him all the same, until I've decided what to do about it.
I don't trust him, Your Ladyship. It may very well be that he does not mean you any harm until the book is open, but if that eventuality arrives, then, well, his actions may be very different.
Oh, I said nothing about trusting him, Mr. Fraser. I wouldn't trust him any further than I could throw him, which is not at all.
Quite so, Your Ladyship. Yes, yes, indeed. But this is certainly a very interesting tactic for him to be taking. Clearly, he is as unable as we are at present to be able to see what the contents of that book are.
I'm sure we can find an alternative way. There are still some avenues to explore, and I have a theory based on how the last lock was opened as to how we might do it.
Well, perhaps we can discuss that on the Orient Express, because I have made arrangements for us to take the 5:30 p.m. train out of Venice, heading towards Trieste.
Ah.
It seems that the sailings from the harbour have not only been somewhat curtailed by the actions of the Blackshirts, but... those that are still sailing are not headed in a direction that would be of any profit to us. So I think there are little remains for us but to continue as we had initially planned.
I think it might be safer.
I concur. With the Orient Express, we at least have some sort of safety, it being an international train, and also they will have security. Whereas with any local means of transportation, we can't be certain that we will have anything of the sort, or that the security involved would actually protect any of us. So, I do believe the Orient Express is the safest way to go.
Yes, yes, you may very well be right, Your Ladyship. Has anybody seen Mr. Griffith and Miss Bellinger?
Mr. Griffith is with Paul, I believe. I did hear them speaking as I made my way downstairs, but I don't believe Mr. Griffith is feeling all that well. Mm. You seem to be making a faster recovery, Professor.
Maybe it's the tea. It's, yeah, I don't know.
Speaking of Paul, I had a wee chat with him earlier on, and he is aware of Miss Bellinger's condition, shall we say? And he did intimate that he would be wishing to speak with her whilst we travelled, in private, so to speak, in a medical capacity.
Yes, I hope you don't believe it out of turn, but I did overhear the vast majority of that, and I have to confess I'm somewhat concerned. I mean, I remember some of the events in the clock tower, and they were, I don't know, somewhat disturbing. To say she was overconfident would be putting it a little too mildly, I think.
Very much so, and if I hadn't managed to grab her, she would have left the clock tower with the Comte.
Yes,
I dread to think what might have happened to her in her belief that she could travel through the air. It seems ridiculous to even say it. A lot of things that seem ridiculous have happened recently. But to the matter of Paul's examination of her, I think it might be prudent that we keep one eye to his ministrations. He does seem to me to be a somewhat... ambitious young man, and I would not like to think of him manipulating Miss Bellinger to further his own ends in his profession, so to speak.
Yes, indeed. I have to say his ministrations seem to consist largely of the application of large doses of whatever it is that he gives us. I'm slightly suspicious that might be the cause of some of this, or or certainly something that's exacerbating the problem.
Well, I'm fairly certain Miss Bellinger and I have been taking the same medication. You don't see me wandering off claiming I'm a god now, do you?
Well, no, quite. I mean, these things affect people in different ways, don't they? I mean, perhaps you have a higher tolerance, a higher threshold for these things.
Perhaps.
Good breeding, blue blood. That's the ticket. But where is Miss Bellinger? Is she in her room?
I haven't seen her this morning, so perhaps. I thought she'd be down here with you, actually, looking after the professor.
Perhaps we should check if she's okay. I mean, I can't really make the stairs in this thing.
Oh, Professor, let's get you along to her room, shall we? And we'll see if she's there.
Yes, I think we should. I mean, yes, no one seems to be in a good way at the minute.
You travel down to Miss Bellinger's room, and she is.
Perhaps she is with Paul. Roundabout we go. That's it. Push the wee stick to the left. That's the way.
I've been somewhat out of it for the last, day or so, and she did make it back okay, didn't she?
I believe so, yes. She was with us when we returned to the hotel. She went straight to her room.
You notice Paul coming out of the Simon's room. Oh, great. It looks like almost everybody's up and around.
Yes, indeed. Have you seen Miss Bellinger, Paul?
I mean, we spoke this morning before you and I chatted, but other than that, no. Perhaps she's made her way downstairs to eat some breakfast.
No, we've just come from downstairs, haven't we?
Oh, so after a short search about, it's clear that Miss Bellinger is not in the hotel upstairs or downstairs.
Was the, I hate to ask the question, was her bedroom window open?
No, I don't think so. Paul steps back in and looks at it. No, it's all closed here.
I'm going to go down to reception and see if she's gone out. They'll have seen her. Yes. It's not safe for her outside if she's gone out.
Well, at least she hasn't tried to fly or whatever she was doing out of the window. It could be worse.
Reception tells you that they saw someone fitting Miss Bellinger's description leave about half an hour ago or so, and that they saw her absentmindedly playing near the water. Then she walked on down the boardwalk. They would remind you, of course, that the water seems very high today for Venice. Portions of the boardwalk may be treacherous a little bit with water.
Professor, I don't think it'd be particularly safe to be trying to push you through the water in this thing.
No, I mean, it's wooden. I suppose it might float, but no, I quite agree.
Paul, would you care to assist me in trying to locate Miss Bellinger?
Well, certainly. I'd be happy to.
Your ladyship, would you care to accompany us, or would you prefer to remain here?
Oh, I'll come along.
You all set out from the hotel, and knowing that you can't really go to your left as you exit the door, you're forced right by the way the boardwalk sits. Because the path left, that bridge has been washed away a little bit. It's underwater at the moment. What you're seeing here is a significant tidal raise in the area around Venice. It has choked off some of the walkways, including some of the ones that you would normally be using to get back towards the San Marco Square and the Basilica. You encounter that walkway, the main one that you took back from the Basilica a couple of nights ago, is now knee high with water. The chair simply cannot go that direction. But there is a small walking path that leads back, like, almost like an alley, beyond the library that the two of you visited earlier. You think you can get back that way should you so choose. Entering that space, though, you all would see that a lot of people have gathered and are gathering near the Basilica. You get a very strong sense of the religious fervor that's going on. It's a little scary. Everyone being so adorned with religious objects, mostly crosses. The area here is thick with people who are heading towards the Basilica and the square. They're wading through the water knee deep, like they think it's not there.
Would Richard recognize any part of this as any sort of strange ritual or occult thing?
If you'd like to roll a cult, I suppose. You're going to presuppose it's an occult thing?
Yep. Unless it's something else, but
I mean, one couldn't say.
That was an 81. That's a big fat fail.
on the logical side for you, Richard, what you're figuring is that the city of Venice is going through a tough time. And so people who aren't so, we'll say, scientific minded are leaning on what they know. And they're leaning on religion.
Yes, I don't trust these people. I don't know who they're worshipping or what they believe in. Or whether they know.
Well, let's find out, shall we?
You continue your movement down towards the square and you exit out through some of the alleys into an area surrounding the square. And you see that there is a host of people there in that square. They seem to be engaged in some sort of religious practice, one that includes prayers and self-flogging. And it's shocking to see so brazenly, openly. It's not completely unheard of for certain very fervent religious people to engage in some sort of self-discipline, which involves
flagellation.
Yes, but this is very widespread. And so I'll give you all a hard spot hidden roll.
That's a fail.
That's 11.
Failed a roll.
I did. 67 over 63.
I got 69.
Fortunate for you in that chair.
I rolled an 11 under 80.
You see the problem. Sure as God's green earth is roused again, you see the source of the problem, Mr. Fraser. And that is, at its core, at least a small core of these people, stands one Margaret Bellinger. She is standing, at this point, on the back of one of these people to stand over this crowd. And she's barely saying a word because she doesn't seem to have to. And she's sort of taking in this praise and this flagellation as devotion. It's clear she's got 10 or 15 people encircled here.
Oh, no.
And they are praising her.
No, 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 no. This is not good. Your ladyship, look. It's Miss Bellinger. She's at the center of it all.
Oh, good Lord.
I can't see from here. What are they doing to her?
Worshipping her or something.
Worshipping her?
Yes, she has them.
We knew Americans had delusions of godhood in general. I just didn't think it would appear so suddenly.
Oh my.
But how are we going to get her out of that? If we try and remove her, there'll be chaos, there'll be a riot.
Yes. Paul?
Yes?
Do you happen to carry a syringe with you? And maybe some of your pain relief medicine? I was wondering if perhaps you could sort of...
You see where you're going with this, Professor.
Yes, get close and then she could, I don't know, be seen to collapse in some sort of fit of, I don't know, whatever it is. And then maybe we can cut her off if they become disinterested.
I don't think it will work. I'm willing to try, of course, but my concern is the reaction from the crowd. I am not a pugilist and we are not in a state to be able to fight off 10 or 15 fairly upset Venetians.
But if you were to try and appear to worship her and then maybe offer her something...
Paul looks at you, Professor. I don't think that's the proper method for any sort of a lady. Quick and unseen is not the way we do things in the medical field. I don't know about the field of physics, sir.
Well, no, but I think the situation calls for discretion, don't you? I mean, if you were to walk up there and try and administer some sort of drug, you're going to get mobbed and quite possibly murdered, but...
I think the idea would be to salve her with kindness. Use words rather than the syringe in this point. At least get her to willingly walk away from the crowd, which, granted, may be difficult. But if we let her know, perhaps if our focus turns to something she does care about more, perhaps if we tell her that we need to collect the pieces of the simulacrum, we need to collect your pieces so that we can go. She seems to care an awful lot about them.
Ah, we could claim that somebody's trying to steal the leg.
Tell me, Professor, have you ever lied to a woman?
Well, I don't generally lie, but I must have done at some point. Maybe a compliment, or... Yes. Perhaps I was giving praise for a piece of cake or something, which was possibly diabolical, but I didn't want to hurt anyone's feelings. That sort of thing. Is that what you mean?
I do, but you ate the cake anyway. The idea is to make the lie believable if it's going to be a lie. And so perhaps we should tell her that we're going to be leaving the city soon and she'll need to collect her things, including the pieces. Draw her away without creating a ruckus.
Well, how about we could say that they've already been loaded on the train and that she needs to come with us or they'll go without her.
If that's your aim.
I think so.
I can push you over there. He begins wheeling you through the water. It comes up probably to about just under half the wheel. While your pant cuffs may be getting a little wet, at least the bottom of the chair is not wet as well. And you kind of get wheeled over and sort of sat nearby. And it's at this point, Miss Bellinger, that new followers, new believers have begun to join the crowd. These you know fairly well. And it seems the professor is ambulatory again.
My friends, you've decided to join us. I won't require that you engage in any of the whipping, though.
That's reassuring.
Richard, what happened?
I don't know. I was trying to make my way over to you and created some sort of path by pushing these two things together, hoping that might create a problem. But I fear the only person it created a problem for was me. And I believe I'm on the mend.
Well, Richard, what is this silly chair? You can walk.
I don't think I should. I mean, I certainly can. You're right. I mean, I got into this chair unaided.
Come into the water, Richard.
I'm not entirely sure that's a good idea.
During this time, Maggie's moving about the people and cupping her hands mm-hmm. and lifting up some of the water and letting it run down their back so that their blood like runs more into the water.
Certainly.
In this sort of like gross baptismal scene.
Yeah, they take sort of the water and the mud and keep in mind, obviously, too, the blood that's been spilled in the water nearby is also... You're treating it like a salve, like a cooling and an appreciative salve for their many, many wounds at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I think that water may contain sewerage. I believe these canals are used as outlets. And I'm not quite sure that's very safe.
It's perfectly fine, Richard. My children are of the water.
Yes. Anyway, I wanted to tell you that we've... As I think we discussed maybe a few days ago, we've had everything loaded aboard the Orient Express and we're hoping to catch the later train.
The Orient Express? I thought we'd be taking a boat.
No. I don't believe there was...
The water is the safest means of travel.
Yes, but it'll take ages. I think we
My
would
children
have to...
can't protect us on a train. They can protect us on a boat.
I think... It leaves soon. I think it would be marvelous if you could come back to the hotel and get changed and, you know, maybe out of your slightly wet clothes there, and we can be on.
It's very clear, too. Maggie's clothes are completely drenched at this point.
Question, though. Did Richard just say that I need to go back to the hotel to get changed, but all my stuff is on the train? I'm trying to remember specifically what Richard said.
Why don't we give you, Maggie, a hard in-roll?
Okay.
To see if you can catch him having tripped up linguistically.
Just a regular success.
No, you don't put that together, so...
Okay.
Anyway, I think it'd be fantastic if you could come back to the hotel and, you know, we could grab a spot of lunch before the train leaves. I mean, we've had the parts, the arm, and he sort of nods knowingly, all packed away for you, and they're heading over to the station. So, I mean, we need to go. We have to sort of get onwards.
The pieces are being moved right now.
I mean, I've been in this chair, but yes, I believe they're all packed and sent to the station.
Without me present?
Well, yes, I mean, we were planning on going on the train, so...
Do you make a business of touching a lady's personal belongings?
Well, I didn't pack them personally. As I say, I've been,
Oh, well, then who did?
I don't know
Fraser,
exactly.
This sounds like it's just like something you would do.
I believe the hotel staff took care of the moving of the luggage, Miss Bellinger.
Well, they weren't in packed in luggage. They were in my bed.
We must head back to the hotel with all due haste. I mean, it's possible that they'll be making up the room now then. And,
That's a very good point. If they were in your bed and they were missed when the luggage was being retrieved, then, well, perhaps they will be stolen by the hotel staff. You know, you can't trust hotel staff.
One of you make a persuade roll, which, of course, can be resisted.
I think I can be very persuasive.
I've heard that about you, Professor. It's very strange you'd have such a high persuade.
It's the only way someone like him survives.
Oh, no, I'm aware.
That's 34 and 58.
All right, so that is a normal success. Mm. So this is resistible, of course.
Mm-hmm.
I think Pow is probably reasonable to resist persuade with.
Yeah, Maggie's torn because she loves her body parts. She also loves her people.
She is a little torn.
Yeah, it's hard.
Because the parts are what bring her the comp day.
Yes.
Hmm.
These people are food. Food for the river. Food for the water. I'll see if Maggie resists. Just to make it fun. Let's make it fun. Leave it to the dice gods. 74 under 75.
Right. So, while it's the same style of success, by numbers, Richard has a higher success, but it's really done by type of success.
Yep.
Yeah. I guess we'll leave... we'll say that unless the professor wants to push the roll, or unless Maggie wants to push the roll to have some sort of intentionality about what she's going to do, I think that's reasonable.
So Richard will say, and I was rather hoping that we might be able to develop those photos you took. And yes, we had such a lovely time in the cafe in Paris. Come on, let's go back to the hotel. He says, pushing the roll. That was a 95.
That's a failed push.
Mm-hmm.
He reminds you of something very important, Miss Bellinger, and that is that he is the one who prodded you last night to get your camera in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And he is the one who couldn't take a hint the last time, even though it was right in front of his face.
Mm-hmm.
And so why should you reward him at all with any sort of time or suggestion for that matter? It's fairly clear your position is here with these people, at least until your children have what they need, it being food.
Exactly. I wanted to kind of lead them a little further out in the water in hopes that they would get eaten. I mean, how's Maggie? Maggie's a reasonable swimmer.
Oh, yeah.
Can I try to continue to lead the people out? Richard, I have no time for this. You are one of the reasons that I am here. You encouraged me to look into the canal to take the picture. You have helped to show me who I really am. If anything, you should be kneeling along with these people. Maggie will start to like slowly back out into the water and encourage people to follow her.
The people who are standing by, who are continuing to chant, they've learned your name. They have figured out what to call you. And you can hear them in this chant iteration, Maggie, and they're of course pronouncing it Maggie and with an Italian accent.
Mm-hmm.
And at first it was a little strange, and now it's sort of a little endearing to you to hear them chant your name in the shortened Italian Maggie. And so it is slowly becoming a chant, and the rest of you who are there are beginning to hear and see these people chant her name, and they kind of follow her like a little school of fish around the big mother fish. You follow her and follow her. How far are you leading them?
How far out do I think I would have to go to get one of these things to eat one of them?
Oh, you'd have to get them to the Grand Canal, of course.
Oh, that's a ways, isn't it?
Which way is Maggie heading with them in her wake?
She can head one of two ways. So she could head out of San Marcos Plaza itself, and she could head directly south after she leaves the plaza, which isn't too terribly hard.
No.
And she could walk directly south down a shortened walkway near the library you were at, but not, right? So she could head
Yeah.
And she could walk them right to one of these sort of drowned bridges where mm-hmm. the water has come up, because obviously the plaza at this point is knee deep. It would not be terribly hard.
Yeah.
Might be a little time consuming, but not difficult.
No, that's what I want to do. That's actually kind of what I was thinking position wise of where I would probably lead them out. The rest of you are certainly welcome to join if you feel that you are worthy.
At this point, Fraser is looking desperately back and forth between the others. And we can't. She's in. They're all in terrible danger. We have to stop this.
Paul turns to you, Mr. Fraser, and you see he has been hurriedly working at something inside of his doctor bag for a minute or so, and he turns to you with a syringe. He says that this foolishness must end.
Right. Let's do it then, man. And I will make best speed towards Miss Bellinger. And I'm going to try and, I suppose I'm going to try and grab her and stop her from heading out into the water proper.
Wonderful. Okay. So
how deep are we? Are we waist deep here or something like that?
We are not waist deep yet, but soon enough you will be. And that's really where you're trying to press the advantage here, because if you get waist deep, things are going to get very difficult.
I'm going to extricate the professor, like pull his chair further back. If there's a rush or people start moving faster, his chair won't get pushed into the deeper water, because that's my concern at the moment.
Certainly. Okay.
Where's Simon when you need him?
Paul says, just get her attention and hold it, and I'll do the rest.
Oh, I'll get her attention, all right. So, yeah, I am going to, wade out towards it. Are you swimming yet, Miranda?
She shouldn't be.
No.
So you're basically at this point about mid-thigh. Some of the smaller parishioners, some of the younger members of your clan or your your community, your religious following, they have begun swimming because they're shorter. Some of the women are now wading through waist deep. They're not even bothering picking up their dresses to move. They're just leaving them. And so there's a wake of fabric.
Yeah, and I imagine Maggie not only leading, but slightly moving through the group as well, and to encourage them physically, kind of putting a hand on their face. If I see a smaller child struggling, I might even show them favor and pick them up and carry them a bit.
Oh, yeah, certainly. They continue to chant your name, and they continue to move with you towards the walkway.
I'm going to try and get in front of her as best I can, because I've got a kind of a plan.
I don't want to mire this with the chase rules. I don't think that Maggie rightly understands she's being chased. Exactly. Because it's hard to tell with 10 or so people around you.
Maggie's never been chased in her life.
What I'm going to start doing is I'm going to start acting like a devout worshipper of of the beautiful Bellinger. And I will wade out as fast as I can to try and get in front of her, saying, just sort of shouting, "Oh, yes, we must worship the great Maggie. Yes, everyone chant her name, Maggie. We must worship her. We must baptize ourselves and I start splashing water up over myself. We must cleanse ourselves of our sins, and we must use the purifying water. And I'm just going to splash water, and then I'm going to start splashing water over Maggie as well, to try and distract her from Paul, who hopefully is sneaking up behind her with a syringe full of sedative.
Yeah. Okay. So I think that's fair. Go ahead and give me a roll. Yeah.
Fraser, what are you doing?
Let's see here. That's got to be, I don't want to say, I mean, you could say persuade, you could say fast talk.
I could say either of those. I'm going to be damn lucky if I get a successful roll in them. I've seen the light, Miss Bellinger. I've seen the light.
Okay. If you're going to direct it directly at her, why don't we see if Fraser can charm Maggie into giving him her focus?
Well, I've rolled a 50, which is not a successful anything very much. So if this isn't working, I've got no option but to try and push it. And the way I'm going to try and push it is I'm going to lunge forward towards her and say, "We must bathe our savior in the purifying water," and try and get her do the classic kind of swimming pool baptism kind of thing.
Sure.
And try and dunk her in the water. And whilst I'm doing that, I'm going to basically try and immobilize her to some extent so that Paul can get in through the crowd and do what he needs to do.
All right.
So I have no idea what I'm rolling here, but I'll roll some dice.
We'll say charm first.
And this is going to be a pushed roll.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've already failed my charm. Not by much, but... Well, that's a hard success on my charm. 20 under 42.
Okay, so I think psychology maybe for Maggie in this state, I'm going to say it's a hard difficulty.
Okay.
Because you're surrounded by so many people who are desperate for your attention. Mm-hmm. And it's not that you couldn't give him your attention. It's that you won't understand the ploy if it's not a hard psychology success.
I rolled a 1 under a 10.
Oh, of course you did.
Jesus fucking Christ.
So you see that there is a ruse underlying Fraser's intent. And worse yet, you suddenly put 2 and 2 together.
Oh God.
He held you back at the clock tower, and now he's holding you back from being who you're supposed to be.
Well, I can't say I didn't try.
You might turn to him, but for something totally different.
Yeah. I have some loyal followers now, and they've been worshiping me in a very different way than bathing me with water. And I think that they need to share their method of worship with Fraser. As much as he's obviously devoted, quote unquote. So I would encourage with this new follower, share with him. He must shed his own blood to feed the water. And I will kind of like gesture at their whips and towards him.
Oh, yes. And it doesn't take much for you, Mr. Fraser, to see the crowds turn. Each one in kind, man, woman, even child, turn towards you. The little one that Maggie had on her shoulder leaps down into the water. And even though she has to swim, she has a fervent desire for you to feel what it means to be a servitor of Magai.
If I see that they have their attention totally focused on me, it's not ideal, but it kind of works. And I am going to lead them a merry dance away from Maggie.
Understood. So Maggie, make me a spot hidden roll.
That is also a success.
All right. So that is, well, you watch as this crowd of servitors begin with a frenzy to hunt down James Robert Fraser with all the tenacity that they can behold. And for you, Mr. Fraser, it's quite exhilarating to be chased through the water, at least for
terrified.
The moment. Sure. Terrified, of course.
A dozen people charging after me with whips and the like.
Yes. They are a little distance from you, so that it'll take them it would take them a little bit to get you, not too terribly long.
But I'm going to try and keep their attention focused on
certainly,
me. So,
certainly. Yeah. And it is this massive uproar, Maggie, that covers for what happens next.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the painful stabbing prod into your backside that happens. And so you can't dodge a surprise attack, but you can make a con roll.
Okay. That's a hard success. 17 under 45.
So you don't immediately pass out. You get stabbed in the posterior. And it isn't like a knife or something like that. It's a massive hypodermic needle. You turn reflexively, because that's what happens, to see what's going on. And there's a plunger and hypodermic sticking out of your rear end. And Paul is there. And he looks a little different. He doesn't look coy or upset or demure. He looks devious.
A two, Paul.
It's for your own good.
Can I lunge at him?
Certainly.
To try to push him under the water?
Certainly.
Assuming that's fighting brawl.
It is fighting brawl, absolutely.
That's 21 under 32.
Yeah. So I have an 8. Paul pushes your head underwater. Like, you lunge at him and he puts his hand out and you feel it on top of your head for a minute and he pushes your head underwater.
Yes, I have older siblings I'm familiar with.
And you take in a big mouthful of water. And then you immediately try to right yourself and find your feet. And that's really when, once the blood gets up and gets moving, that's when you start feeling dizzy and woozy. You can continue to fight back and thrash against Paul. He disengages from you. He doesn't want to seem to follow it up with a body slam or something like that the older brothers might do.
Maggie would probably try to fight for as long as she could, but, you know, eventually she's going to go down.
You thrash against him and you land a couple of fairly what you believe are solid hits against him, like physical, like punches, but you start feeling like your arms are 15 pounds heavier. And as you wane, so does the crowd that goes after Mr. Fraser, unbeknownst to you, of course, because at this point you're about to pass out in Paul's arm. And as you do, you feel him prop you up, and in your ear you hear, "It's perfectly okay, Miss Bellinger. We'll have our time." Mr. Fraser, about 50 or so feet away, the crowd has suddenly lost steam chasing after you. You've got enough of a step ahead of them to keep them at arm's length. And as you race back towards San Marcos Square, they lose steam. Whether it's a physical exertion or not, it's hard to tell. But they leave the rabid nature of her declaration somewhere in the water. And these people look a little lost suddenly.
I think I'll probably be soaking wet and rather exhausted by now, having splashing through the whatever part of the piazza that we were on, or a side street or whatever, to try and draw their attention. But if they are losing interest and sort of dispersing, then I'll head back to where the others are. Maybe have to take a slightly roundabout route, but I'll make my way back to them in the hopes that Paul has been successful in his attempts to sedate Miss Bellinger.
Yeah. Professor, you watch, and so do you, Lady Elizabeth, as Paul returns with Miss Bellinger's body. She's seemingly a little passed out. And the three of you, you, Mr. Fraser, and then Lady Elizabeth, and then the professor, see him. I don't want to say effortlessly, because it isn't without effort. But Paul is stronger than you must have sought at first. He seems to heft her form with not ease, but perhaps practice. Maggie isn't terribly large or heavy, as you can imagine, but this is a little different. Paul returns with Maggie and places her, drapes her over the chair. Professor, I'll trust you'll keep hold of her.
Yes. Thank you.
Not your first time carting around self-claiming deities, is it, Paul?
I'll spare you the truth and the horrors of Charrington.
Quite. Well, I do think we should get out as quickly as possible before the divinity arises.
Oh, and to that end, I have secured a steamer trunk for the pieces anyway, so that way they can be at least moved reasonably. She'll be out for a few hours, but we should make haste to the train station and make our preparations. Venice is obviously coming unraveled, and I mean no disrespect, but I no longer wish to be here with this. He kind of gestures to Maggie. She's in a state where these people would believe her abilities to do anything.
We have no wish to remain here any longer than we have to either. So, shall we go?
Certainly.
How long do you think she'll be out for, Paul?
A couple of hours at least. I gave her twice the dose I would give a man like Simon.
Is that safe?
Is it safe? No. Is it necessary? I believe so. Given how excited she was, I was worried that a normal-sized dose might not have put her in such a state as quickly. I made a medical decision.
As long as she's all right.
That remains to be seen.
Well, we should make preparations for our departure, although we have some hours yet.
Yes, the sooner we can get out of here, the better. Nobody's been the better for this place. This is awful.
Seek and rise and drown the whole place for all I care.
be happy never to see Venice again.
It starts raining. And with that, our investigators will head back to the hotel. They'll collect their things, the necessary items, and they'll head off towards the train station for a late afternoon and evening ride to their next location. Thank you so much for joining us for this episode of Horror on the Orient Express. We hoped to see you next week.